Okay, good. Okay, the weekly share from Masechta Sukkah is sponsored by Yitzhak CPA. Wants to shake things up a bit this tax season. I guess tax season always continues for an accountant. And the breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch in honor of, once again, Jaime's granddaughter. Okay. So,
we are on
Daf Chaf, Amud Aleph, literally right around halfway in the middle of the Daf, where there's Tana Rabbana Machatzela Shel Shifa. There's certain part of what's called, everybody would tell you that learning Gemara is definitely not a sprint, it's definitely a marathon. Mm-hmm. And even it was somebody like Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zichrono Levracha, they say he used to finish Shas, but it took him a whole entire year to finish the entire Shas. He would do seven daf a day, and he would finish Shas an entire, once a year, wow. Would make a siyum on Erev Pesach. That was his mila.
With that,
that I'm not sure. As far as he's concerned, probably he just was more interested in the Torah than what they were eating. I don't think he cared that much about, but I don't know whether the people around him did, but for anybody who's ever done running, you know that certain parts during a run you're kind of flying, and other parts you kind of like feel like you've hit the wall, hopefully not literally, which could be another problem. And I find that sometimes when we're learning, there's certain sugyas in the Gemara that fly, and there's certain sugyas in the Gemara that kind of feel like you're slogging through the mud a little bit. This thing about plodding through, this idea of the mats and the tum and the tahara, which we have been really dealing with the past, in our share, 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks, and tum and tahara for the past probably month and a half, hopefully will be coming to an end a little bit, I think, for maybe a week or two, then it'll be back. Don't worry. But once you get to, you know, I think once we get to Dav Chav Hei, then I think the Tum and the Tahara stuff is going to be past us, and Bez Hashem will put into practice in the Beis HaMikdash, but not during Dav Shavua. Now, all right, so we're going to begin with other types of mats. We quote a Braisa, which tells us, Machatzela Shel Shifa Vishel Gemi. If somebody makes a mat out of papyrus or makes a mat out of bulrushes. I wasn't really sure what a bulrush is, so I looked it up. It's kind of like a reed thing that grows out, and it has like a little brown tip on it. And apparently, if you're either Irish or Scottish, don't bring them into your house because it's a symbol of death in the home.
Oh, wow.
But I guess for a sukkah, you're not bringing it in your house. You're putting it on the roof of your sukkah. And I guess, right, and nobody was Irish either, so I think we're okay. But for whatever it is there, I guess, therefore, if you ever want to go into business and move to Ireland, don't start a bulrush business because you're not going to do so well. Let's have a funeral home. Anyways, regarding a machatzelis of shifa and gemi, so it says if it's gedola, if it's a large mat, misachinba, you can use it for schach because these are not used for laying down or anything like that or any purpose. So because it has no purpose, it's not going to be a clean, it's not going to be a kabbal tumma. Kitana, if it's a small one though, in Misachin Ba, because again, this is something which can be Mekabel Tum. Okay, so this is what we have as far as these two items are concerned. We have two more items, Shel Kanim, which are certain type of reeds, Vishel Chilas, and plated reeds. Now, I'm not going to be making a reading mistake. Gedula, Misachin Ba. If it's Gedula, which is a very large coarse weave that you're able to use it for schach. Aruga, if it's a much finer weave, then you can't use it for schach because that's going to be used for, that could be mekabel tum. What is exactly, why am I reading this word? Gimel Dalet Vav Lamed is in gedula as opposed to gedola, because that's actually how Rashi understands it. It's going to come from the word gedil. Familiar with the word gedil when it comes to tzitzis? Tzitzis are gedilim, and if you take a look at your tzitzis strings are not just plain strings, but they're actually, each one of them is woven of certain other smaller strings, and that has to do with a certain type of weaving, and there's a very fascinating Rashi. It's the Rashi Gemi. It's the end of the second medium-sized line of Rashi, who's going to explain to us exactly what's going on in this particular case over here. I just want to read it through. And this is where you're going to see why we read that is gedula versus gedola. So Rashi says gemi is yunk, whatever that means in ancient French. It says dehein rachin, that they are very soft. So again, when we were talking about the bulrushes, they're very soft. Therefore, hilchach stam ketana yesh behem l'shchiva. And therefore, if the general small type of mat made out of these bulrushes are used for laying down, for the Irish outside the home, lo shna gedula maisei sharsheros shehi ava. It doesn't make a difference if it's like a very thick type of weave, which is called geduva, which is like a chain, ve'ena chalaka, and it's not as smooth, lo shna aruga, nor whether it's finely woven, shehi chalaka, that's smooth. V'hainu dekitani, and that's why it says, gedola misachin ba, if these mats are large, which are not made for sleeping, then you can use it for schach. Kitana, but if they're smaller, and they're used, they're sized for people to use and to lay down on, ein misachin ba. And there's no difference when it comes to these first two items, whether it's a large weave, a gedula, or an aruga, or a fine weave. These reeds in the second part of the braisa, so they're a little bit rougher. Chelas, which are laska. These are much thicker. So Rashi continues and says, gedula. Maisei avosu klia, if it's kind of like a chain and like a braid, misakin ba, afilo kitana, even if it's a smaller mat, why? De'ena l'shchiva. It's not fit for lying down. Lefisha hi ava, because they're very thick. Ve'ena chalaka, and they're not smooth. Ve'et shalakasha, you probably get a lot of splinters, and I guess somebody who wants to lie down on a mat, to sit down, it's probably not advisable to sit down or lie down on a mat that's going to give you splinters. Aruga, ein misachin ba, why? Destama l'shchiva, delo hayu regilin l'arga, ela l'shchiva, shetehe chalaka v'nocha. The only time they would do it was so that it should be a little bit smoother. So, again, just to summarize, you have these different materials. You have shifa and gemi. So these are, in general, a soft type of item. And no matter how you're going to weave it, it's going to be theoretically usable. So therefore, we're just going depending on the size, as dictated by the Mishnah earlier on, that something which is gedola is not going to be fit for schach, something which is ketana is. But when we're dealing with the second items, that's konim and chelas, which are a little bit rougher and a little bit less smooth. So then, it's not that the size necessarily plays a role, it's also in the construction how it's done. And we're saying if it's gedula, if it's a very loose type of weave, like kind of like a chain or a braid, that's not fit for lying down, and therefore it can be used for schach. But if it's aruga, it's a much finer weave where you kind of like negate the roughness or the splintery quality of these items, so then it can be used for schach. Now, this is all the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yishmael, but Rabbi Yossi Omer Mishum Aviv. Rabbi Yishmael, son of Rabbi Yossi, is quoting his father, and he says, achazo, achazo, misachin ba. It makes no difference with the last two items, with the konim and the chilas, whether it's gedula, whether it is aruga, you can use it for schach. Vechein, hayar Rabbi Dosa Omer Chidvarav, and Rabbi Dosa also would say that you can go ahead and use it. So it happens to be, there's a machlokas as to whether you can use these type of mats, whether they are really aruga or not. And because he said, because they hold, what you really need to do is like this. Well, what exactly is this machlokas based on? So the way that the Mefarshim explain is, again, do you really need like a certain type of designation or not? So that the Tanna Kamma is going to be saying that since these things, when they're aruga, when they're very finely put together, they can be used for a mat, even though they're not always used for a mat, but they can be used for resting or sleeping and such like that. So therefore, automatically, it's something which is susceptible to tumah. Comes Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Dosa and say that no, you can't just necessarily go by the potential or the possibility for it. It has to actually be designated. And what are designations? So that's something that they spoke about last week. Rabbi Palmer mentioned that there's a rush which says it depends on the actual minhag hamakom and what they do for it. And there was actually a situation where I was reading an article by Rabbi Kaganov who was talking about a hechsher that he gave to schach mats. And he said that one of the schach mats that he was told that he gave a hechsher on for sukkah was actually produced in China. And then for them, they actually sit and lie down on all types of mats. And so what he asked them to do was that he had them put in the schach mat every couple of rows, there's this thicker, almost wood-like piece.
So it's not comfortable with the
schach. Right, so I always thought it was just, you know, to help weigh it down. But apparently it's not there to go ahead and weigh it down. I mean, maybe it is to weigh it down also, but it's also there so that you wouldn't go and sit on it, that even people in China wouldn't be using those type of mats because we're choshish for the rush. That's what the Ramah Paskin's like. So this is what we have over here. Yeah. And once again, my guessing and my ideas about building and stuff like that proved to me that I know very, very little about that subject. Okay. All right. So anyway, that's the first topic. And now what we're going to get into is more general Tumah and Tahara. We've been speaking about how whether mats can be Mekabel Tumah, whether mats can't be Mekabel Tumah. But we've just, you know, done it, say it's yes or it's no. But what we haven't been discussing is, and I know that some of us are on the edge of our seats for this, when it can be Mekabel Tumah, what type of Tumah can it be Mekabel? Right, see, Gemara's going to take it a step further. I know. See, Emil is really excited about this one now. Yeah, not just can I? You've been waiting, haven't you? So yeah, okay. So we just need a little bit of introduction in terms of getting and making sure in terms of, you know, basic ideas of some Tumah and Tahara, because it's going to be relevant to our sugya what you have over here. So first of all, the mats that we're talking about are basically, most of them are treated like wood, mostly treated like a kliates. And in fact, if you look at our sukkah mats, the sukkah mats that we have, the typical sukkah mat, it actually is already hardened and is kind of like wood. If you've made it something soft in the beginning, it usually hardens out and it's kind of like treated like an eitz. So for something for an eitz to become tameh, we have two rules. What we call pshute kli eitz, if it's a regular flat thing that's not really used to hold anything, unless it's something like a table specific, or a chair, it's not mekabel tumah unless it has what we call a base kibul. A base kibul is a receptacle. It can hold something. So kli eitz, if it can hold something, it's susceptible to tumah. If it can't hold something, it's not susceptible to tumah. So that's item number one. Item number two is we're going to have something called tumas mace, and we're going to speak about tumas medrus. So let's first start. We know we're very familiar with the halacha that kohanim can't go into a Jewish cemetery. They can't go into a cemetery because we know a kohen can't become tumah for a mace. I never had this issue growing up in Queens because we didn't have a lot of trees. And whatever cemetery there were, it's kind of like isolated, either places where Jews don't live or someplace on Main Street where Jews don't live. But in Clifton over here, where we have a lot of trees and we have Jewish cemeteries, it does come up as an issue. I remember getting a phone call, probably not the typical phone call that usually get from parents in camp or before camp. Usually they're like, are they going to swim enough? Are they going to have this? Is my counselor, so my son's counselor going to be nice? Or the lunch is going to be good? All these really, really important questions. And I got one from a parent who said that you have to change the bus route. I'm like, what's wrong with the bus route? He goes, we're Kohanim. I says, very nice. He wants some truma. I don't have anything to do with you. But he goes, we're Kohanim. That's very nice. He goes, well, the bus happens to pass down, I think, by Dwa's line, one of those areas where, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I'm like, I'm going to call up the non-Jewish bus company and try to explain to Tim and to Monica about Tumas Kohanim and branches and all that. They thought we were crazy before, but Lamaisa, we ended up doing it, and I ended up actually driving through Clifton, getting lost as I usually do, and we ended up finding a way that the branches, or when the bus goes down, it's going down an area where it's not going to be covered by the branches overhanging the cemetery, because Tumas Mace is a very, very strong type of Tumah. We know a mace is called Avi Avos HaTumah. It is the strongest form of Tumah that it is. It could become Metame something Be'ohel, just by covering, like by a tree. And anything that a mace touches, or not even a mace touches, if you're under the Ohel of a mace, so then you become an Av HaTumah. Now, what makes an Av HaTumah? That's the next level. An Av HaTumah has the ability to make food and kalim and people tummy. Anything an Av HaTumah touches becomes a Rishon. Okay, so just keep that in mind. So, a mace is Avi Avos, and what a mace touches becomes a Rishon. A Rishon could make something into a Sheni, but the only things it can make into a Sheni are people and Kalim. We have another type of Tumah called Zav. Zav is a certain type of Tumah where it involves when a person has a certain emission, or a male has a certain emission, not shechva zera, but a different emission. The Gemara Nida delineates what's the difference between the two. I don't believe it's something that we don't practice today, Zav or anything like that, but the Gemara Nida does delineate between the two. And when we have Hilchos Tumah and Tahara, we're going to be able to come more into practice. But one of the things about a Zav, person who's a Zav, is an Avatuma. Anything he touches should become a Rishon. Just kind of like normally it goes. When a Rishon touches, it should become a Sheni. And it goes down in order, decreasing with Tumah, as the further you get away from the source. There is the one major exception when it comes to Zav, and this is something that doesn't apply to any other area, and that's something called Medrash. Medrash refers to either sitting down or lying down. So let's say, for example, there's a person who's a Zav who sits down on a chair. This Zav who sits down on a chair, so that chair is now had Medrash of the Zav on it. The Zav has been sitting on it. If there's a mat and the Zav stands on it, or there's a bed and the Zav lays down on it. So normally, one would say what? If something is an Avatoma and he touches it, it becomes a Rishon. However, when it comes to Zav, there's an exception. The exception is that anything or any type of medrash that a Zav touches remains an Av as well. It's a special exception when it comes to Zav. So the reason why I brought this all down is not just to give us a crash course on Tum and Tahara or to share you some of the more interesting phone calls I get in camp. And how, like, you know, if you have any Tum and Tyler or Shilas, you can go ahead and call up the D&M bus company and they'll be able to tell you all about Kohanim and cemeteries and stuff like that. But it's because it's going to be relevant right now to the mat issue in terms of not necessarily related to Sukkah, but related to mats themselves and how they can become Tumay and to what level. So we bring down, where it says Tanan Hasam, we bring down this Mishnah that's quoted from Edios, and it says Tanan Hasam, Kol hacholzos mitam in tumei meis. All types of what's right now, we'll just call them cholzos. We'll get to what they mean exactly very soon. But all of them can become tumei meis, meaning if a mace is in an area, if a mace is touched by a mace, so then they become an avatuma. Divrei Rabbi Dosa, that's what Rabbi Dosa says. V'chacham momrim medrash. They can become medrash. So if a zav sits on what these things called cholzos, it could become an avatuma through the Zav. Now, the Gemara goes ahead and jumps on this mission and says, wait a second. The Chama say, it could become Tumas Medrash, and become an Av from a Zav. It doesn't say anything about becoming an Av from a Mace. And we know that a Mace is a stronger form of Tuma than a Zav. So the Gemara jumps in and says, Medrash in, Tumay Mace low. You're going to tell me that what? It could become an avatuma from a Zav, but it's not going to become an avatuma from a mace. So the Gemara says, right? V'hanan tanan, there's another permission that it says, kol mitami medrash mitami tmei mace. Right? Obviously, if you think about it logically, it makes total sense. If it's going to become an av from a lesser form of tuma, or a less concentrated tuma, then certainly it should become an av from the most highly concentrated for tuma that we have. And the Gemara says, relax. Yes. Ema, af medrash, yes. When it says medrash, it doesn't mean only medrash, it also means even medrash. Okay, we put out that fire, which is good. Now, the Gemara wants to know, we said cholzos. What are cholzos? That's what the Gemara wants to know. So, my cholzos. So, Amar Rav Dimi Bar Hamduri, Rav Dimi Bar Hamduri says, marzubli. They are marzubli. Oh, now we're okay. Again, marzubli. Okay. For those of us who are not experts on what marzubli are, so the Gemara says, my marzubli. So Amar of Abba, mizabli. Guess it helps a little better, right? No, so here already, Rashi tells us what mizabli are. Rashi says they are, in French, they are bulus, whatever that is. And it says, v'osri l'roa l'hanichan tachas rosho v'lishkov. It's like the sack that a shepherd carries around on his stick. When you have a shepherd walk around the stick and he puts the stuff in this little sack and he carries it on the shoulder, in Hebrew they call it a tarmil. Mm-hmm. Familiar with that? Or there you go. So a tarmil.
Tarmil, it's like a knapsack.
Knapsack, right. So it's like something, right? So they tie and put, right? So here it's made out of one piece of cloth and they tie it on the stick and they carry. So this they would actually sit down, that they would lie on. So this is what we're talking about of cholzos. That is what the Rav Dimi Bar Hamduri says. They are actual mats. So here you have over here, according to Rish Lakish understanding the Mishnah, Rabbi Dosa said a mat is susceptible to Tumas Meis, but it's not susceptible to Tumas Medras. And the Chacham are going to be saying that a mat would also be susceptible to Tumas Medras. And the Ozer Reish Lakish the Tamei, and Reish Lakish is following the reasoning that he has in another area, the Amar Reish Lakish, and now we have a very fascinating Gemara, which actually is a totally, almost like an editorial comment that Reish Lakish makes, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the Tum and the Tahara of Mats, but listen to what it just says over here. As Amar Reish Lakish, Harini Kaparas Ibchil Banov, any Yisurin that I get, or any trouble that I have in this world, should serve not as a kapara for me, because the Gemara in Brachos says very often the yisurim that people have serve as a kapara, or an atonement for his neshama. He says, I don't want those kapara, but instead, please give the kapara to Rabbi Chiya and his sons. Why does Rabbi Chiya and his sons deserve or warrant the protection from Reish Lakish? So it says, Shebitchila originally, Kishe nishtak the Torah mi Yisrael, when the Torah was almost forgotten, Allah Ezra mi bavel v'yista. Ezra went up and he established the Torah. And in the times of Ezra, it's spoken about over there in the Sefer, and I've not really read through the Sefer so much, but I've read about the Sefer, and they said that when it came to Sukkot's time, Ezra held up a lulav and esrog, and everybody looked at him, and many people looked at him, and they're like, what's that? So you see how far, but the type of assimilation that took place for the Jewish people living in Bavel, intermarriage was rampant, and people didn't even know what a lulav and esrog is now. Yeah, I mean,
just go to Middle America.
I was going to say, unfortunately, it's not necessarily such a far-fetched thing for us to think about. But this would, so what did Ezra do? So there happened to have been some other great Talmidei Chacham alive then. Their Chagai, Zachari, Malachi were alive. Baruch Ben Eri was alive. But what Ezra did was Ezra actually went around and he taught Torah to everybody, and he was able to bring up the level of learning to the point where Jews were halachically literate at the time. So it was a tremendous thing what he did. That's what Ezra did. Chazer v'nishtakha, but then again, it became forgotten. So Allah Hillel HaBavli v'yista. So Hillel HaBavli came, and he was reestablished the Torah. And the Aruch Lanier says what we're dealing with Hillel was, Hillel lived at the beginning of the Tanaim time, end of the Zugos time. And how far back we remember, but when we were learning Chagiga, there is a Mishnah that speaks about doing smicha on Karbanos on Yontif. And it actually goes through the whole Zugos procession from generation to generation about how some said, yes, you do smicha on Yontif, some says you don't. You do, you don't, you do, you don't. And eventually, during Hillel's time, you had the beginning of prolification of machlokas. That was the first machlokas that we have on record historically. And Hillel was worried about the fact that there was going to be two Torahs. Could you imagine this? One Jew and three opinions is a terrible situation, right? Something we never see. But Hillel was worried about this. And what did he do? During his time, the Aruch Lanier says there was a baskol that came down. This is brought down the Gemara that says we paskin like Hillel. And that kind of like codify things a little bit. So during Hillel's time, at least we knew that, you know, okay, there's the opinion of Beis Shammai, and then there's the opinion of Beis Hillel, but at least we had a certain mahalik, a certain way to follow. So that's what happened with Hillel. Chazer v'nishtakha. Then again, the Torah became forgotten. So al Rabbi Chiya ubana v'yistuha. So what happened is Rabbi Chiya and his children went ahead and reestablished it. What did they do? So quickly, so the Gemara in both Ksuvos and the Gemara in Bava Metzia speaks about how Rav Chiya went and he planted reeds. He used those reeds when he cut them down to make nets. He used those nets to trap deer. He shechted the deer, gave the meat to poor people. He wrote Sifrei Torah on, or not actually Sifrei Torah on the deer. He wrote Chumashim on the deer. And he made five different scrolls, and he taught five different boys, or five different people, one Bereshis, one Shmos, one Vayikra, so on, through Devarim. And then he said, you, the Bereshis expert, you teach the other four people. You, the Shmos people, you're going to teach the other four people. And then they all became experts, and then they started disseminating the Torah that way. So it was like he was able to contrive a system where Torah growth was able to grow exponentially. He did this also with Mishnayos. And that's why the Gemara says, thanks to Rabbi Chiya, we were able to go ahead and spread Torah. He was living during the times of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He actually is credited for writing many of the brises that we have. And again, that was a time where the Jews had just finished up the Hadrianic decrees where Torah study was prohibited, and there was a tremendous downtrod of Torah. So therefore, Rabbi Chiya was credited for bringing back the Torah. So, it's a nice little sidebar, but let's get back to what we're talking about over here. Rish Lakish said that when it says Choltzos, they are talking about actual mats. Fine. And now Rish Lakish was quoted saying, again, I want to be a kapara for Rabbi Chiya. And what exactly did Rabbi Chiya say? It says, V'chein Omer Rabbi Chiya Ubonov, Lo Nechleku Rabbi Dosa V'chachamim Amachatzolo Shel Usha. It says that the Chachamim and Rabbi Dosa didn't argue with the mats of Usha. So before we even get into this, what do we see? The Machlokas between Rabbi Dosa and the Chacham about how far it becomes Tamei, and we call them Choltzos. We see, what are they arguing about? It's not this shepherd sack, but rather it's an actual mat. Okay, so that's what we brought this down all to see. So it says that the Machlokas is not about the Usha mats, Shehein Tameos. They are automatically susceptible to Tumah, and they are susceptible to Tumas Medras, because that's what they're there for. Vishel Tiveria, Shehin Taharos. And when it comes to Tiveria's mats, the mats made up in Tiveria, they are Tahar. And nobody's going to lie down on them. Al Manethaku, what were they disagreeing with? Al Shar Mikomos. They're talking about the mats other places. Mar Sarvar, Kevan Deleke, the Yasiv Alayhu, Kiditveria Damya. So the one who holds, this would be Rabbi Dosa, says that people don't sit on them. It's like Tiveria, and therefore they're not Mekabel Tumas Medras. Well, Mar Sarver Keba Demikri V'Yosvi Alayhu, sometimes, since they do sit on them sometimes, Kida Usha Damian, and they are susceptible to Tumas Medras. Again, if you think about this for a second, what is Machlokas about, right? Some say they are sit on them, some say you don't sit on them. It sounds almost like a Machlokas in Mitzvahs. Just simply arguing about what's the case. Do you sit on them? Do you not sit on them? And we generally don't like to explain a Machlokas anywhere as just being, you know, is it in situation A or situation B? Because we could just go ahead and let's do a survey. What do we need a machlokas for? So really, way to understand this machlokas is, they both agree that sometimes you sit on these mats and sometimes you don't sit on these mats. Meaning you sit on them not regularly, but in an emergency, or they can be used. You know, you don't have anything else, you can sit on it. And the question is really, where do you draw the threshold? That's really what the machlokas is. Meaning they're not arguing about Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim are, yes, you do, versus no, you don't, because go out and see what the people do. You don't need a machlokas like that. So rather, no, they both agree that most of the time you don't, but in an emergency you do. And the question is, where do you draw the line? Do we go by general usage or do we go by complete usage? If you say it's going to go by complete usage, so then it's susceptible to Tumas Medrash. That would be the shita of the Chachamim. If you're going to go by the general usage, that's going to be the shita of Rabbi Dosa, and it's not susceptible to Tumas Medrash. But see, right over here, we see a machlokes as to what a mat can become tummy for, whether it's just Tumas Meis or whether it's Tumas Medrash also. Okay, so we just quoted before, Amar Mar, Kol Acholzos Mitamen Meis, Divrei Rabbi Dosa. So Rabbi Dosa said, all mats can be are susceptible to Tumah. The problem is, if we read a little bit, if you remember, we did a little bit earlier, we had a price that says, Vatanya, V'chein Hay Rabbi Dosa Omer Chidvarov. Earlier, in the beginning of this year, we spoke about Kanim and Cheles, those two items, and Rabbi Yossi said both of those items are usable for Schach because they're not Mekabel Tumah, and we had Rabbi Dosa concurring with them. So what do you see over here? Originally, we said that just now on top of the Amud, we said Rabbi Dosa says the mats can be Mekabel Tumah. On Amud Aleph, we said that the mats are not Mekabel Tumah. So, lo kasha. This is not a contradiction, because what we're going to say is that we're going to be dealing with two different situations. Ha de isle gedanfa, ha de leisle gedanfa. When they're mekabel tumah, that's if it has a rim. Because as we said in the earlier introduction that we gave, because then that mat, even though it's not used for lying down, but as long as it has a rim, it's a base kibble, it has a receptacle, and it can hold something. Something that can hold something is susceptible to tumah. Ha de leisle gedanfa, when we spoke about an Amud Aleph a little bit earlier, that they're not mekabel tumah, and they can be used for schach, that's if it has no rim, and since they can't be used for lying down, so therefore, it's not mekabel tumah. Okay. So till now, again, we've been saying choltzos are mats. Now the Gemara is going to go ahead and challenge this, meisvei. Choltzos shel sham, v'shel gemi, v'shel shrak, v'shel sfira, mitamin t'mei meis, divrei bidosi, v'chachamim omrim af medras. So again, choltzos, which right now, we're going to go back to saying that there's a machlokas, whether it's actually a mat or whether it's like a shepherd's bag, they are susceptible to tumah. What type of tumah? That's a machlokas tanoim. But now the Gemara says, Bishlam alaman di amar marzubuli. If you're going to say that this is really the shepherd's bag, shel sham v'shel gemi, if you're dealing with sham and gemi, you'll read in papyrus. So chazu, sorry, the sham and shel gemi we said before was, or gemi we said was the bulrushes, and sham is like a type of a soft reed. So we're saying over here, chazu l'kitna d'peri.
Sham, I think it's cork.
Cork? Okay. Yeah. So we have cork. So these things are used to like cover or to hold payros. It's a type of a, you can put them in, use them as like a basket for large fruits. So think about like, you know, avocados or melons or something like that. Shel sak v'shel sefira. Chazu l'gulki v'tzini. These are fit for gulki and tzini. These are types of things that Rashi says you put in kitniyos and you put in smaller type of fruits. They can hold those also, those mats. So that's why they're susceptible to tum. These bags. Elalaman diyamar machatzelos mamish. If you're going to tell me that's actually a mat. So again, bishlamah shel sak v'shel sfira. So if you're going to say a sock or a sphere with these other type of items, chazu lefarsei, they can be used as like a curtain. V'nafusar, they can be used to help sift flour. Elashel sham v'shel gemi, l'manichal mai chazu, what are they used for? You're going to be using these type of things to, apparently they're not using them for shade, and they're not using them to sift flour. So the Gemara says, chazu l'niziyasa, they're used to cover a barrel that they make beer. That's what Rashi says. Rashi says, it's used for, it says, l'chasos behen gigis, she'osin behen shechar. So because it has this particular usage, so then that's where it's a settlement to tuma, and that's why we don't have an issue saying that chotzos, which Rabbi Dosa and Rav Chachamim are arguing on, is really a mat. So we see that all these things, all these items have a purpose, and because there's a purpose, it could be used for something that's susceptible to tuma. Ika the Amri, those who learn this question the other way. Bishlam alaman de amar machatzelos mamish. If you're going to say that these are your actual mats, I can explain to you why they're susceptible to tumah. Shel sham v'shel gemi, chazu l'niziyasa. These are used to cover that as the beer barrel. Shel sak v'shel sfira, chazu l'parsi v'nafusa. They're used for shades and they're used for sifting flour. El l'man d'yomer marzubli, bishlema shel sak v'shel sifira, chazu l'gulki b'tzini. Those are good for nuts and kitniyos and legumes and small fruits. El shel sham v'shel gemi l'may chazu, what are they good for? So the Gemara says, chazu l'kisnu l'piri. So either way, both opinions, whether namorayim, whether it's these macholzos, whether they are actual mats, or whether these tarmils or the shepherd bag, either way, whatever you're using it for, whatever material you make it from, they are susceptible to tumah, they have a usage, and that's how we can fit in the Mishnah and Edyos that we quote with this particular brisa. Okay, one last little item about mats. It says, Tanya was taught in a brayse, Amar b'chananya, kishiradati legola, when I went outside Eretz Yisrael. And Rashi says he was actually doing this, interestingly, was to be ma'aber the shana. So it says, matzasi zaken echad, the Amar li misachim bibudia. I saw a certain zaken, and he said that you're allowed to go ahead and use a mat for schach. Ukshebasi etzel Rabbi Yeshua achi abba. And when I came to Rabbi Yeshua, the brother of my father, he came and told me the following. Hodel advarav, he said it's okay. And I'm a Rav Chista, but Rav Chista qualified this and said not every mat is usable, but rather vahu delesle gadanfa, doesn't have a rim. But if it has a rim, whether it's not used for shchiva, because it has the rim, as we said before, a kli eitz that has a rim, and it's receptacle, it can hold something, so that is susceptible to Patoma, that's what we have over here. And we have a similar membra, Amar Ula, Hani Budisa, Debre Mechuza, these mats of the people of Mechuza, Ilmali Kir Shalahen, Misachin Behu. That had they not have that little wall or the little rim, then you could use them for Schach, Taina Mihachi, and we have another Brisa which says this, Misachin Bebudia, if it has like a little rim, which is the gedanfa, ein misachim bum, you can't use them for schach. Hadron alach sukkah, hadron alach sukkah, hadron alach sukkah.
What would happen if we flip it over? So the rim, it's towards the bottom. Then it doesn't. It's not considered
still
a kli.
Think, I still think, but I think, but I'm saying, since
it has the same kli,
right? I think like you know a cup also. If you turn a cup upside right,
it's still a cup.
Right. Well, the truth, a cup upside down can still hold something inside, but still, it, yeah, it still hold could. Yeah, you could. Can't hold a fly, right?
Because from what I understand, it's a mat like a bamboo, and so right. They had a bigger bamboo on this on as a rim,
right?
Not exactly a rim, but it was a bigger
right.
Bigger bamboo that. Creates a rim, but it creates.
So there's actually machlokas we've shown him best whether it was on four sides, or whether it was on two sides. Meaning it could be like this.
So it's not a kli anymore.
No, so even if like this, I guess you could still hold it, you know, back and forth. I guess if you would put like the. Just think about like, you know, an avocado or a mango in it.
Right.
And if you roll it back and forth, it will still stay in.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about. It doesn't have to be, you know.
All four sides.
Right. So I think Rashi believes it's actually all four sides, but it still has to be tall enough for it to like. Hold the mango in, but it doesn't have to be necessarily
right. But, you know, but such a mat, if you flip it over, it's not a kli anymore.
Well, it still does have. I mean, I think as long as it retains the rim. I mean, if you put it down, the rim just collapses flat. I don't know if you would consider that. Right. I mean, but if you know, it's one of those. I think it's one of those things where it's actually.
It's elevated.
Right, it's like a box cover, like a pizza box type of thing.
Wouldn't that be the same issue? You have the mat, and then you have leaves that fall down. Okay, or you've got, you know, nuts from a tree nearby. Okay, they just sit on top of the mat between the webs. Not even, you know, the raised part of the bamboo. It just lays there.
No, but if you would go like that and flip it over, so then it would fall down.
Right.
I mean, so that's what we're talking about. Meaning the okay. idea of having the rim is if you pick it up and you move it, so it's going to like retain inside. Right. I mean, you put anything. Listen, if you take a plain piece of wood. That hasn't been finished, right. And you put something on top of it, it's going to hold it. But the issue is, like, you know, it's got to have a receptacle. A receptacle means it has walls around it. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
So when we look at, like, our mats today, we're, you know, using what Erez mentioned, where it has, like, at the ends, it has, like, the thicker bamboo. Many of them do.
At the end, of, yeah, but it's not the...
It's in the roll, built in.
Right.
It's supposed
you roll
to be
it,
there,
it has,
so
like, a thicker...
A little bit, but it's not going to contain something. You're not going to, you know, if you
on
carry
the
it, right.
It doesn't contain.
Right. Also, it doesn't have on the side. Also, if you don't can,
right.
And also, if you hold it, it's not going to, you know, it will roll right off. It's not going to be.
Right.
It's almost like you're holding, like, it's like almost like a tray.
Yeah, okay.
Right. You need, like, it's got to be something.
It needs to be elevated.
A little bit. Like, think about, like, you know,
slightly.
A game box or a puzzle box.
Sure.
That's kind of like what we're talking about there already. It's something which. If you would go back and forth, it would stay in. If you would take a large fruit or something like that, or a ball, and take your mat, if you could do it, and then they're too big. But if you would do it back and forth, it's not going to stay on it. So that's why it wouldn't be considered to be a rim.
For a big kibul, does that have to be a kibul for both liquid and dry?
No, either one. It doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't matter.
That is right. Because like some of the stuff you're saying over here is, you know, like dry, you know, big fruits and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it doesn't it doesn't have to be necessarily that, because you can have stuff with a funnel.
Correct.
Right. You make a funnel out of wood. You know, it will still hold stuff in there. You know, but it's
right.
not gonna the so liquid's gonna go down.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. So that'd still be a couple of jamah.
Right.
What about the fact that the open mat, okay, concept, just the flat mat. You might put things up there to dry the fruit.
So again, as long as it's flat, it's not, meaning, we're not talking about the fact that it's actually staying on it, that's not going to be as much of an issue. The issue is more, could it hold it or not? Mm-hmm. You know, because again, like you could take a plain piece of wood and you can lie stuff on to dry on the plain piece of wood, but that plain piece of wood is not going to necessarily be a kli.
Right.
It has to have that receptacle and stuff like that. Okay.
Okay.
Very good. Yeah, so next time, we're in the second parak.
Right.
Now we got
next week.
Not next week,
it's
right?
The following week.